Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of SaaS Boss. Today, I am excited to introduce my guest today, Etienne Guiraud-Bouchard.
Just the right enough of butchering.
Who is a three-time startup founder, and he is writing his fourth book. One of them is Lean B2B, Build Product Businesses Want. And then the second one, the SaaS Email Marketing Playbook. What was the third one?
Called Solving Product that came out in August. So it's about specifically being able to pinpoint the issues in your business, including SaaS businesses specifically.
And what's the one that you're working on right now?
I don't have a name yet, but it's about specifically repositioning a product. Very so finding cool. The right audience for your product.
Very cool. Etienne, welcome to SaaS Boss. I'm excited to speak to you. Can you help us frame a little bit the conversation? What it is that we're going to talk about today?
So we're going to talk about email onboarding strategy. Onboarding is critical for SaaS businesses, as I'll explain, but we'll go into details as to why it's difficult, why you need to do this well, and best way to figure this out.
Awesome. Let's get started then. The floor is yours. You can go ahead and share your screen.
I will. Okay. So as you were mentioning, author of different books, some missing. But more important for this discussion, I was in charge of customer engagement at a company called Lander. And Lander is left and right because it was initially a mixing tool using artificial intelligence, but it became a mastering tool. So meaning when a song gets published, it typically goes under mastering, which is the final version of the song. And we have a tool that does that automatically for people. So it's a B2C business. And we used to have a lot of customers that were coming in, and we didn't necessarily know what we were going to do with these customers. So a lot of things that come in this presentation are actually stemming from those experiences. So within that work, I ended up creating with my team a lifecycle program that ended up contributing to 4x revenue growth in 2 years. So there's a lot of things that were learned, a lot of things that we failed at, and I'm going to share a bit of these lessons. So first question, why is onboarding difficult? There's a lot of reasons for that. So depending on what type of product you have, there's going to be different ways that people discover your product. So one of the ways that's becoming more and more common with the change in buying patterns are reviews, but it could be ads, could be organic traffic, could be referrals. These people will have different contexts as to what your product does, different stories that they've heard about your product, and different ways of understanding the value that your product might provide. They might have different roles, different profiles, especially if you're in B2B or enterprise. You might actually need to sell to multiple stakeholders. They will have different levels of motivation. Some of them might just be curious to check out what your product is all about. Some of those might actually have a need today and actually need to complete a task or do something today. They might have different needs, different understandings. They might be misunderstanding your product. So the reality is, initially, when you're starting up or early on, it's a lot easier to appeal to one target, which actually always is a subset of people. So different perspectives, different views on what your product is. But as you grow, your product grows, you'll inevitably end up targeting different profiles. So that just complexifies everything because you end up having to target different people that have different worldviews, different ways of understanding the value that your product provides. And the reality is that averages create imperfect solutions. So you can try to create an onboarding process that works for everybody, but you're always going to be failing if you're targeting some of these people. Because people come in at different speed with different expectations, different understanding, different goals. So this is partly what led to the creation of what we call the Atlander, the train track approach, which is basically where you figure out what's the most appropriate station where people can get on in your email program and how you actually transition them to their objective. So we don't all start at the same point, and we don't all necessarily want to get to the same destination. The important thing is to make sure that people get on board at the right spot and end up as close as possible to their objectives. Beauty with Train Tracks is that as your business grows, it makes it a lot easier to minimize overlaps. So especially if you're in B2C or you have a lot of customers, at some point it gets messy to start and track what happens or the customer journey for all your different types of customers. It makes sure that you actually reach out to everybody. You try and onboard everybody, you try and maximize the usage of everybody that signs up to your product. It helps you simplify tracking and give you structure for assessing user states. So if you just start sending random emails to your users, you'll have difficulty actually creating the behaviors you're trying to amplify. It will be harder for you to get to make progress or help these people make progress in their lives. To do that, to be able to create your train track, there's two things that are required. We'll talk about in this presentation. So one is understanding the product. So what's specific about the product that you built? And the other part is understanding the specific people that you're targeting for your product. So you need to understand the natural cadence of use. So different types of product, different types of SaaS products will be used at different cadence. For example, if you're building tax software, you can probably expect that people will use it once or twice a year at most, hopefully. If you're building, for example, invoicing software, it might be 2-3 times a week. So there will be different cadence, and different types of cadence will create different types of onboarding and different types of expectations in terms of engagement. So there's products like the product that I was mentioning, Lander, that are as well episodical. So they're more difficult to make work within a SaaS context, so a typical month-to-month SaaS context. So that also needs to be factored in if that's the case. You need to understand what your goalpost is. So what are you trying to get people to do? So how do you know that they're ready to be upsold? How do you know that they're ready to they're engaged with your product, that they're actually becoming fulfilled and getting value from your product? You need to understand your aha moments. You need to understand what causes people to realize the value that your product provides. So that might be a variety of different things that causes people to realize that, oh, this product will actually help me within my work or will actually help me in my life. You need to understand your sales targets. So if you're in a situation where your business is cash trapped, so you need to generate a lot of money quickly, your approach to, for example, onboarding might be different. You need to understand mandatory steps. So if, for example, your intercom, there are steps that are required. You need people to actually set up intercom in order for them to use the product and get value from the product. So that might be the case in your business specifically. And you also need to understand what's already in place. So if you have onboarding in the product, if you don't, if you have other emails filling in, if you're using, for example, transactional emails to communicate with people, you need to understand the landscape so that you're not doubling it up, because your goal is to create that consistent experience where people are getting one story that helps them fulfill their goals with your product. However, there's a few inconvenient truths. So email open usually decrease over time. And two, email is a more indirect way to get users to activate, because people need to get the email, open the email, see the content, click and act on that information. So if you can't actually have make changes in the product, that's going to be more efficient as a way to get people to onboard with your product. Email is part of the story. Everything needs to work together, but they serve a different purpose. And ideally, so to focus on the must-have experience. So what sometimes people call the minimum path to awesome. So the minimum amount of steps that are required to get people to experience maximum value in your product. And you need to front load that experience. Just because what I mentioned, people might stop opening your email. So they might not be getting the rest of the story. So you need to provide value as quickly as possible so that people open your next emails, but also fulfill the task and get the value in your product. So there's different ways of doing that specifically. So a typical path would be to start with a welcome email, having onboarding emails. And the general ideas to be able to understand the behaviors by creating different points where you assess the performance. So based on what people have done, what people have not done, you would send them on a different path. For example, the people that have actually performed core tasks in your product, you would want to create habituation, so make sure that they actually create the habit of using your product so that you can eventually upsell them and get them to be on a long-term subscription with your product. RAS people, if at a certain point they have not done any of that, you'd like to address that and be able to make sure that they get that first win so that they actually start understanding. So the sooner you're able to make an assessment and understand what people are trying to achieve, what they didn't achieve, you're able to better address their needs and send them on the right direction and the right train track. So the goal with onboarding email specifically is to move users closer to their desired outcomes. So what they're trying to achieve with your product. You want to create the habit of using your product, the habit as well of opening your email so you can keep that communication path open. And you want to get people to understand the product value so they eventually end up paying for your product and get to have a more meaningful relationship with your business. As well, if there is anything that is hindering their use, you want to use these emails, these opportunities to lower that friction. So if there's anything that people need to do, set up, understand to be able to gain maximum value from your product, you also want to use that as well. So different ways to do that can be done through by showcasing different use case with the product, by showcasing the benefits, by sharing case studies or customer stories that people using your product and getting value from it. So the idea is to find ways to connect the objective with what people what people are experiencing in the product with a way to drive them into the product so that they can actually complete their engagement with the product. So this is a series that I created for a product that I sold last year. Basically, just a welcome email that just tells people welcome aboard, get people excited, and make sure that they get an overview of what the actual value of the product is. Clear call to action, get people in the product, get them to complete their actions in the product, and get them to their first win with the product. So this opened at 70%, I think it was 20% click or something like that. So using personalization, using the momentum of signing up by sending it quickly after people sign up and getting them on their way to achieving the goals that they set out to do. Rest of the series, so trying to open the door for support if there's any issues to be able to get people to engage with the company, especially in that case, it was automated service. So we want to create something that's a little more human and have more of that relationship, human relationship with people.
I love that you're actually showing the actual examples. I hope you don't mind that I interrupt, but there's one question from George, and he is asking, what do you do if people register and not install the script?
I think in that specific case, you need to send them on a different path. So within that product specifically, we had a fairly complex onboarding process where people needed to connect, integrate with Google Analytics and as well their email marketing platform. So that's already two things that are required plus several steps for them to actually get the value of the product. If they do it well, it's a couple of minutes. If they don't, so there's a lot of drop point within this. So we had a typical series, which is the one I'm currently showing, but we also add behavioral emails that we're sending based on what conditions people did complete and didn't complete. So the goal was to help reinforce the right behaviors by basically sharing. So the idea is you make an assessment at a certain point. So for example, if people sign up 2 days ago, and typically within 2 days, the right users would end up setting up your script or end up using the product properly. If they don't do that, you need to have an alternative path that actually drives people for that specific action. And because of that, because you're able to make that split, you can have that pattern way more targeted specifically to their use case. So in that case, what we were doing for us specifically was that when people were not connecting their Google Analytics account, for example, we had another path that was reinforcing the value of the product, reinforcing the reason why they want to do that, the types of insights they were going to get, just to make sure that we get them back on the right path so that we can actually maximize their usage of the product.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. So this is the positive path. So the first sequence in the book, I talk specifically about the alternative path. So there's a lot of different things that you can do, but initially you want to set up that first path to be one, to be able to start getting data and understand how people deal with the product, what kind of issues they're dealing with, what works, what doesn't work. So this is something we set up in a couple of days just to start getting that data, start getting that workflow and see what kind of performance we're getting from this. So just the sequence as well. So like we had identified a certain set of wins that we thought people were going to get from the product. The idea of defining what you think aha moments will be in the product is a bit problematic because if you are, as the creator of the product, are saying, okay, so this is what people are going to experience in terms of value, this is how they're going to discover it, you're always going to be wrong. So it's important to start learning and then see and readjust based on what people actually experience and how people actually experience the get the value from the product. So we ended up resequencing this email sequence a couple of times just to make sure that we got the right wins at the right time and the right sequence.
And how do you, what metrics do you pay attention to identify, do we have it right? Are we,
yes,
are we doing the best we can?
Yes, it's really critical to understand that what you're putting in place is actually driving the results that you wanna get. So if they're not actually, like if you're sending emails, but they don't actually have an impact on what people do in the product, then you're just sending emails that are not doing anything. So that's partly why I recommend starting with one sequence, keep it simple, and progressively test the impact. So you set up one first email, you see the difference in terms of behavior. So do people that open this email and click on the link behave differently than the people that do not? So are you actually having an impact on your activation metric or whatever it is that you're checking against initially? And then you want to keep adding emails as long as it adds up. It's incremental from that first email. So if you set up, for example, 16 emails right away, you're going to miss on that story. So you're not going to be able to see the incremental add from these emails specifically. I don't know if that's clear.
So initially, how many emails would you suggest that we start with?
So I would suggest that you start with one. You could set up a full sequence if you have enough volume in terms of people signing up and starting to use the product, or if you're good at tracking the performance from specific emails, which will be trickier. But if you're not, you want to start with probably just a welcome email, see if that has an impact. Then you start with the first email, second email, third email, fourth email, fifth email, and then you branch it off from there.
Got it.
So what I'm mentioning in that case, so if you're looking specifically at your activation rate, which you should, activation rate will be, it's the metric that you create that is most correlated with people getting value from your product. So if you look at, say, for example, you're getting 15% people activating in your product, which would be underwhelming, you would want to set up a first email and see an increase in that performance. And then a second email and see again an increase over the previous performance. This is the clearest path to do that. Most people will set up a full sequence right away. But if you want to make sure that you're getting everything that you set in place will give you the performance that you want, will give you maximum performance, that's the way to do it. And depending on the amount of volume, you could actually set up 10 different versions of your welcome email. Test which one gives you the biggest lift on your activation metric, and then go with that one specifically. So this very much depend on the type of volume that you're getting. At Lender specifically, we're sending like hundreds of thousands of emails per week. So most businesses will not have that kind of volume. So it really depends in that case. Onboarding email specifically, you want to make sure that they're focused on one action. Again, it helps with the evaluation of the performance, but it also helps keep the story straightforward and be able to get people to the right win in your product. So if your email, we see this often, like if you look at welcome emails that are going to be pushing in 15 different directions, and then people read those emails and they don't necessarily know what the next step is, that creates underwhelming performance, but as well, that doesn't drive the right action. You don't want to be too pushy. You want to, like, this is pretty much, it's almost support to some extent, where you basically want to help people overcome the hurdles that are facing your product and get them to the right win. So it's the positive path. And once you know that they're not on that path, that's where you start to address and you can address it differently. You want to link as far as possible in your product. I'll show a little later cases from MailChimp. Basically, when you click on their links in their emails, onboarding emails, they set you up on the right modal window with the right information already populated. So that drastically reduces the friction of starting to use the product. So if you're actually sending me to the right state in the right part of the product, I suddenly have much less friction in terms of using the product and engaging with the product. So at that point, just matter-of-fact tones, almost support-like emails, often works, but that's something you eventually want to experiment with. You want to make as consistent as possible initially. And the idea is to be able to make that first assessment that are people headed in the right direction, or they're headed in the wrong direction, or they hyper-engage. Those situations should lead to different train tracks at some point where you would say, okay, so the people that are actually super engaged with our product within 2 days, I can probably close them within the week, whereas other people might take 3 weeks or might never convert. for email pacing, initially, it can be a good idea to look at your cohorts and try to overcome the drops. In this case, you could send emails on the first day, second day, fourth day, and then seventh day. That's one way of doing it. There's also just you could test it out and see what happens as well. That is the basic setup of your onboarding sequence, where you would try to figure out what's the minimum action that you try to get people to do within your product. You try to set that up and get and see how people react in that case. And you try to address the behaviors to make sure to reinforce the right behaviors within your product. But as you move forward, you can get a lot of value by starting to understand the sub-segments within your onboarding. Because as I mentioned before, it's pretty rare that you're going to have just one profile of people with the exact same type of mindset coming into your product. So once you're starting to get enough volume and you're starting to get some performance in terms of your onboarding sequence, it can be a good win to start looking at how do you address more of their need to be able to get more people to perform with your product. So one way to do that is by looking at what's the main segmentation criteria that you could use in your product. So for good segmentation criteria, you want something that creates homogeneous groups or groups that can be specifically separated clearly, that are mutually exclusive, whose behaviors can be predicted. I'm going to give you an example in a couple of slides, and that can be reachable through marketing and sales efforts. So you're able to split your user base in a way that makes it easy to understand that this group has a different behavior than that other group. And by speaking to them differently, you're going to get different performance and different behaviors. For example, at MailChimp, so what they used to do, and they still do in some ways, is they segment people by list size. So the behavior of people who are signing up and have 5 subscribers is going to be very different from the one that sign up and they have like 3 million subscribers on their list. So chances are that they have different understanding in terms of what email marketing is, different expectations with the product, and will probably be interested in different paths, different formation, different functionalities. At Slack, it's complete company size. So your behavior, the way you work together will be different if you're 5 people or if you're 6,000 people in the company. And at Lander, so based on the research we had done, we figured out that there were different types of users with different job profiles that had completely different uses for the product. So it was actually very predictable. And by splitting up by different jobs, we were able to get different performance. You can do this. In that case, we realized that some people were, for example, some people were DJs and other people were working for record labels. So completely different worldviews, different ways of looking at things, but they still add use case that made it valuable for them to use the product. So if you focus your communication, changing your communication based on looking at the subject lines to make it more catered to their realities, the email preview test, the text that you see in the inbox, the use case that you use, the examples, what do you offer in terms of bundling or functionalities, what do you promote to them, how you talk about the benefits of the product, the testimonies that you use, you use people that are in their industries or people that are like them, that can have a big impact on the way that the performance of your sequence. So part of the issue there is that it creates complexity, really multiplies quickly. So for example, if you were to start with your first onboarding sequence, you might, if you multiply, you split it by 5 different personas, you end up with 25 emails, and then suddenly you have 50 emails because when you add other things. So that's not something you want to use lightly, but there's a lot of value there. One example that we used from those days specifically is when we broke up our onboarding sequence by persona. So different types of persona. We actually had one email that jumped up to a 78% open rate with a 25% click rate. So it just by just splitting it up by the right behaviors and speaking to the right words that people are using, we're able to more than double the performance of the email. So that can really be impactful once you're later on within your the evolution of your onboarding sequence. So one thing we found out as well is that if people were not becoming active using the product within the first 90 days, only about 2-3% of people ended up using the product. That actually also connects with some research done by Matt Kudu that talks about basically 80% of conversions in SaaS will be within the first 40 days. So the first 30-40 days are very important. It's part of the reason why, for example, MailChimp here sends, I think they sent 11 emails for onboarding specifically. As long as you're able to create emails that add to the performance of your sequence, you can keep on adding. So there's no reason why you should only have 4 emails. There's no reason why you should have 5 emails. You can keep adding as long as it is. It helps you convert more people. The important thing is to get people off your train track, your onboarding sequence, once they've activated, once they became buyers, to actually get them to their next win. So so create the right structure so you can actually keep on growing and keep pushing the people to the right goals within your email program. That was it. Do you have any questions about the email onboarding?
We do have some questions. George is asking, who should send onboarding emails as, the CEO or the account manager?
I think that depends on the type of product. You can definitely experiment on that. There's a lot of different variables that can help influence that. I'm assuming in that case you're in a B2B context. So it would actually probably trigger a different behavior if you're getting an email from the CEO. One example that I use in the book specifically is Zapier, where their onboarding sequence is sent, I think, from their team, but the conversion, the upsell email is sent from the CEO. So that helps create a little bit of that like, you're special, this is important setup. But if you're maybe earlier on in the life cycle of your business, maybe having a more casual tone or having the founders of the business write to people might also work out best. So definitely things to test. Specifically us, we used to test with, for example, there's differences in behaviors when people are, if you write from a woman versus a man, if you write from this department, from that other department. So that there's really a lot of experimentation you can do on that term. But I would say that first you need to figure out like the basic flows before you start experimenting with things like that.
We have another question that I know you are not going to have exact answer to, but we have two people asking the same question. So basically, how many emails or what sequence, what pacing should be for, let's say, 14-day trial?
I think you can, exactly like you said, I don't think there's an exact answer. You can definitely, I would suggest speeding it up as much as possible. So there's a case that I got in the book from Meet Edgar. With your basically social media, you basically sequencing so you can actually republish your social media post. So what they did, I think they used to have a 28-day free trial, and they actually cut the timeline to 14 days, and that actually kept the same behavior, the same performance with half the time. So that actually speeds up your growth, that helps improve the experience, and they didn't see any negative impact from that. So I would definitely think that the cadence of use of your product will dictate that. So if your product is something that people can actually start using today and should be using every week, you could definitely push the pace quite a bit. I see that from some products that will send emails almost every day. But you should test and see what the reaction is. If the usage is, for example, people will use your product once a month, I would definitely think that that's probably too aggressive. But it's a matter of experimenting in that case.
Got it. What are some mistakes that you see founders make most often with their onboarding sequences?
I think they talk too much about their product. So that is one thing. So people are trying to make progress with products. So definitely understanding what people are trying to achieve and framing it in their words and the way in their universe and what they're trying to achieve is a big win, because that helps people understand what they can get from the product as quickly as possible. I think as well, speaking to everybody the same way is definitely not a good way to maximize your relationship with your users. I think it depends on the volume of users you have, but if you don't have a ton of users, I would also almost recommend starting with like completely manual emails where you send one-on-one and you test out what works and what doesn't work. So that can be a good way to get started.
Very good. And then after the sequence is done for a trial, let's say this is a 14-day trial, what is recommended sequence after that? Specifically, we have a question from George. Does it make sense to offer a discount if they do not activate within 1 month, for example?
I would not do that. The problem with discounts is that it lowers the perceived value of the product. And at that point, you want to make sure that they are still... So the discount should almost always be in exchange of something. So as a trade-off. So ideally within that first month, you want to make sure that you're able to get them to perceive the value of the product. And if they do not perceive the value of the product, then depending on your objective, like I definitely know of a lot of business that have done that. And we've definitely done that when sales goals were critical of offering discounts. So I know why people do that, but that is not like it in that case, you're putting in a position your growth, revenue growth versus your engagement growth in your product. Because if you're creating users that expect a discount, they're not valuing the functionalities that you put in place at the right level that you're trying to set. So it creates that false way of winning a little bit in that case. So that's definitely something that I think discounts are better off if people have churned or there are different situations where you've already monetized them to a certain extent, because you want to make sure that they actually are getting value from the product first before you start thinking about doing that.
And just generally speaking, what would you suggest to be our plan of action after the trial is over?
After the trial is over, keep going. So like, trial is an artificial construct to some extent. So if you look at the same study I was quoting before from Matt Kudu, they were talking about like a lot of the conversions actually come after the trial. So by if you keep on pushing people towards value in your product, it's possible that they'd never convert. It's possible that they were never going to convert in the first time, but it's also possible that they end up buying. So if I reposition it a little bit in terms of Lander, so Lander was a freemium product. So you didn't initially have any trial. So we introduced the idea of a trial, which was artificial, as a constraint to get people to convert. But what we also did is we created a massive upsell program that was targeting cohorts of people that had been signed up for months and months and months. And that was super successful. So that was people that maybe were not using the product, were barely using the product. And you can get those people back in your product and still convert them afterwards. So I think there's a lot of value in continuing, keeping up the path of trying to get these people to either buy or to actually at least engage with the product. And that's definitely something you should do. But in that case, you would definitely want to switch to a different train track. So different path where you're pushing different things. So for example, if in your sequence they've not done anything, that should lead to a different path than if they actually did some of the actions that you'd like them to do in the product, but they were not convinced. So the way you speak to these people would be different and could be different in terms of how you bring them back in the fold and convert them.
I wanted to share this example of a trial extension that I received for Helpair. I'm not sure what they do exactly, but it's a SaaS company. And so I was kind of surprised, and this is the first time that any SaaS did that. So they automatically extended my trial by 5 days. Your trial has been extended. We have great news for you. We will extend your trial for more 5 days so you can explore Helpair a little bit more. Enjoy. I really liked it. Yep. A nice gesture. Doesn't cost anything, right? But instead of saying, hey, your trial expired, bye, we're sorry to see you, here's the link to enter your card and stuff like that. Like, I really like this example.
Yeah. There's a great case study as well from Help Scout. I think they were using a similar mechanic to be able to get people to convert it. And apparently that really worked really well for them. I think they were positioning it as a gift. So basically you're gifting people a new trial or an extended trial, and that's like a special thing. And that helps create that relationship. It like helps create a better relationship with people.
Another question. What is the best software in your opinion for activation? ActiveCampaign, another one, and why?
So we used to use Intercom, which I think is they're finally introducing ways to have like a more visual way to see the emails. I think that was the big issue. So when you're working with a team, it's difficult to get a view of everything that's going on within your program. I do think personally that that's a great product. I personally don't use that for my own, like my books and all that stuff. I use a simpler email marketing software. I know ActiveCampaign is really well regarded. I've never used it personally. I would tend to think something along those lines would be your best bet. The issue, I think, is a little bit like some of it will be overkill. So it depends where you are at. So if you're initially, I wouldn't recommend going with Intercom, for example, which might be super expensive and as well might very much be overkill. So maybe start simple and gradually move to something more advanced as a tool.
I wanted to plug in one a tool from a founder who is part of SaaS Buzz community. It is user.com, and they start to just focus on SaaS companies. I have not used their tool, but check it out. See if that's something that worth your time. Etienne, anything else that I didn't ask, our audience didn't ask you, but you think is important for everyone to know?
Yeah. Well, so onboarding for sure is the most important thing in terms of setting up the relationship. Because the more people are able to experience the value up front, it has an impact on the entire life cycle. And then I'd actually recommend that you start looking into your subscriber list, so the retention when people are subscribed. I think a lot of people make the mistake of kind of assuming that their customers are going to be satisfied with the product and that's enough. I think you also need to be communicating to them that they are getting value, reminding them that the value that they're getting consistently to be able to get them to renew, keep renewing, especially if you have people on yearly subscription. So a lot of businesses will tend to make the mistake of either just sending newsletters or things like that to these people or not even sending them emails. So I think that's very critical to get them to keep paying and keep seeing the value and keep expanding that value that people are perceiving in the product. So there's a few sequences that are really important. I think that's a very important one as well, and upsell sequence as well, for sure. So focusing on that core path is very important, and don't try to do too much initially, because if you are just, so one thing that I've seen from people that have bought the book is some people will try to create everything together, even though I don't advise that in the book. And that tends to create an email program that would underperform in that case, because you will not be creating the right sequence of optimization and improvements of your email, and you will not be thinking about it as specific behaviors as opposed to like a whole program together. So to build a very effective email program, you need to go gradually and expand gradually, not build everything at once. So that's what we did initially at Lander, and that completely failed, and that was a lot of big waste of time. So do not do that. And as well, there's a coupon code that we created for the book as well, if you guys are interested to check it out.
Absolutely. Well, I see it. So where can listeners know more about you and get the coupon?
So basically, the coupon works for Gumroad. So if you go to gum.co/SaaS Playbook, there's also a website, saasplaybook.co, that they can check out. Otherwise, I'm on Twitter at EGARBUGLI or on LinkedIn.
Awesome. It looks like we don't have any other questions. Thank you so much, says George. I know, George, you've been on fire today. So thanks a lot for all of your questions. I think this is it. This has been really exciting. Thank you so much for taking the time. It took me a while to get you on my show, and I'm really excited that I did, because lots of value here. Thanks so much, Etienne.
Thank you.